You are listening to Bigfoot, Ground Zero.
What happens when the thinking changes? When conventional wisdom is simply blown up? Could we start over? Where no idea was a bad idea? What if we sought out the truth, however inconvenient the truth might be? What if we found new ways, applying logic with consistent, measured progress, with voices of reason asking why not? What if we use data tracking and predictive modeling? What if we research the science behind the sighting, asking new questions? What if? What if it wasn't about a show, but a movement? What if we did this together? Welcome to the future. Welcome to Bigfoot. Ground Zero.
The world waited, curious, wondering, aware, like a sleeper wakened in the night by a faraway sound. A moment sensed, more than understood.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. You are listening to Bigfoot Ground Zero. My name is Dave. As always, thank you so much for listening. I know there are a ton of other things that you could be doing, but I appreciate the fact that you listen live or download the show and take me with you. I wanted to start out and just say thank you to the folks at the Sasquatch Summit. And you know, I've not met a lot of these folks. You know, Derek Randall's, David Ellis. I had a chance to talk to Dr. Meldrum. I met Shane Corson from Monster X. I met Shelley Covington. You know, just a ton of people. Rick Knoll was there. Had a conversation with him. I know I'm forgetting somebody, and I apologize. Me thinking on the fly like this is not always good. I had never been to one of these events, and I have to say, at the end of the day, not even at the end of the day, when I first got there, I was amazed at how full the room was. I mean, there were hundreds of people there to hear the speakers, and a lot of them came a long way. Now, I flew from Massachusetts specifically for this event and to do a little bit of field time with Chris Spencer, which we'll talk about in another episode. But I got to tell you, the event was amazing. I was not expecting much. To be honest with you, I thought, okay, Sasquatch Summit, you know, this is like a Bigfoot convention. You know, what's this going to be? But it was what I was hoping it would be. Now, you've got two sides of the Sasquatch spectrum, right, of belief. One is more of a spiritual, I don't know what to call it, belief. It's more of kind of extraterrestrial, spiritual type of thing on one side. And then on the other side, there are people who will say, okay, cold hard facts. Here's where the evidence is. Here's why we believe what we believe. And I can only take it so far and not say it's Sasquatch 100% because the evidence only proves it out so far, right? So you've got two sides of the camp. And we actually had, speakers coming from different areas, and they were all compelling, right? And I heard some things, you know, you call it from the woo crowd that talk about, you know, the flute players and the habituation and that sort of thing. But they kind of made a case for habituation. And I guess in a way, I could see where that might be possible. But I'm more of the science belief on what you can prove, not what you know, right? So you might know that Bigfoot is real, but until you can prove it using cold, hard science or facts, it's impossible to get everyone else on board, right? So there were two of these crowds. I know David Pilates was there, and his presentation was great. And it's funny because he won't come straight out and say he thinks Sasquatch might be involved in these disappearances. Draw your own conclusion, though. He's at a Bigfoot conference. I'll just leave it at that. But there were two camps there, and, you know, it was good. You know, some of the talks, you know, Derek Randall's had the talk about the nest findings and how they were situated and how they were woven. And, you know, it was pretty compelling evidence as to something with opposable thumbs weaving these bedding nests that were phenomenal. And they were laid out in a way that, you know, you had a view of the river and the whole nine yards. I'm not going to give all that away. I'm sure you can go to the Olympic Project and see some of that stuff. I don't want to steal their thunder. But, you know, again, it was amazing. I walked away from that really, really satisfied with the, I guess I just want to say, the health and sanity of the Sasquatch community. Because it can get a little zany out there, but the people that are willing to travel, and people came from multiple states, they drove from far away to come here, and it wasn't like, I don't know if you've seen that movie Close Encounters with Richard Dreyfuss, where he's this crazy believer in something that's going to happen, and, you know, he builds this big monument, and suddenly, you know, it comes true. It wasn't like that. It wasn't like we were, you know, it was a bunch of sane people in one room, a ton of them, talking about the subject of Bigfoot, you know, and I thought it was great. So anyway, I'm definitely going to go next year. I've not been to any others. I'm not sure that I'm going to take the time to do that because it is a lot of travel for me to get out from Massachusetts. But thank you, folks, to the ones who reached out to me, the ones who kind of took me in and gave me an opportunity to speak with you. So anyway, I have to share this story. What was really funny about the whole thing to me was that I would talk to folks and they would ask me, you know, what was my, you know, how did I participate in the Bigfoot community? And I would mention this program and a handful of people knew who the hell I was and what the show was all about. And it was kind of amazing to me that people would regurgitate to me what they had heard about the show, and they were avid listeners. And that's kind of humbling. It's kind of a cool thing. So I just wanted to say thank you for that. Some were a little over the top as far as heaping praise on me, which, hey, I love it. You know, keep it coming all day long. But what you don't realize is this is probably the lowest tech production in the history of mankind. I mean, literally, I'm looking at my laptop running right now, and my microphone is in my kitchen, my kitchen table, and it's propped up on a box of Honey Nut Cheerios. Okay, so full disclosure, that's all I got. Anyway, thanks again. Appreciate those people who listen, and you know, if you're one of those I spoke to, thanks so much. Always reach out to me at BigfootGroundZero@gmail.com. I know I'm running on a little bit, but it's been a bit since I've been behind the microphone. I kind of wanted to catch up on a couple of things. But this show is going to be about Sasquatch sightings in Colorado. And this serves a selfish purpose for me. And a couple of months ago, I went out to visit my dad in Colorado, and we went camping in the Arapaho National Forest at a place called Monarch Lake. Before I got there, I wanted to find out in Colorado where there had been sightings, if I could find anybody. And I went on YouTube and I found a video, it was a couple of years old, about a guy named Jim Myers, Jim and Daphne Myers, in Bailey, Colorado, and they own the Sasquatch Outpost. And his story, you know, how he talked about how he built this outpost, he didn't do it because of his sighting. His sightings didn't come until after the fact, But he built this outpost, and it wasn't an outpost at first. It was like a convenience store type of thing, general store. But he knew, he had started hearing these stories about Sasquatch, and he wanted to have a place more or less. I don't even think he knew kind of what he was doing. He built a portion of the store that was dedicated to Sasquatch memorabilia. But then what happened was people started to come to them with these experiences. Well, Jim realized that, you know, people needed a place to come. He created this Sasquatch outpost. Now, full disclosure, yes, you can go online, you can order things, you can buy memorabilia. I have no problem whatsoever with somebody making money doing something they love, right? Jim is telling a story to us that happened to him about a sighting he had and about other people that have had these sightings. But what's really cool is Bailey, Colorado has become a place where people can come in the local area and talk to Jim and Daphne about their sighting. So it kind of serves a purpose, right? It's a place where, I don't want to say it's a Sasquatch sighting mecca where people can come and, you know, offload their stories and feel better about it, but kind of. I mean, Jim has told me stories, and I don't think it was on audio, but I talked to him off mic, and he told me stories about people who come in and kind of shuffle around the store, kind of make eye contact, then don't, and walk over to him, and, you know, do you really believe what, you know? Well, I had a sighting. And he says he knows, you know, every time when somebody's going to do that, because it's just kind of the body language, the behavior, and that sort of thing. But anyway, the story's interesting. Take a listen to it. We will go ahead and I'm going to play the news report that I found on YouTube. It'll kind of set it up for you. And I'll go into the interview. And when that is over, I'll give you my 2 cents on the way out. And I also want to talk to you about the Bigfoot Worldwide Radio Network that I'm putting together. It will be a website where you can go and find all the Bigfoot-related shows that I can find, that I can get people to pull together. So there will be one repository for all things Bigfoot. So if you like this program, you can go to BigfootWorldwideRadioNetwork.com. Click on through and you can check out shows like Monster X and, you know, some of these others out there. Anyway, I just used him as reference, Shane Gunner. I hope you guys are glad. But anyway, let's go ahead and get to this, and I will see you folks on the back end.
Believers say they can be up to 10 feet tall and weigh more than 1,000 pounds, but could a giant creature like that really be lurking in our woods? Bigfoot sightings have been reported across the nation, but one small town in Colorado seems to have more activity than most.
Bailey's becoming known as a Bigfoot hotspot.
Nestled against the Pike National Forest, Bailey is home to about 9,000 residents, tons of wildlife, and potentially dozens of Sasquatches.
He met a local lady who had just had a Bigfoot sighting, and he was so excited because he said, wow, that means they're here.
Jim and Daphne Myers co-own the Sasquatch outpost in town, home of all things squatchy, including evidence of their existence.
He put this big map up on the wall, and people just started coming in, and they wanted to tell us their sightings and their stories. And I have to admit, I started off as I was just humoring him. And as these people started coming in and telling their stories, I had to say, wow, you really did see this two-legged hairy creature, and you're not making this up. So I became a believer myself.
This was an imprint of an elk's body we found in the snow. It had been running, and it was defecating as it ran, which I don't see very often when I'm hunting. The strange thing was there were no elk prints leaving this site. There were no predator prints, there was no blood, and there was no body, no elk body. And the elk was gone. So we just never know what we're going to find when we go out.
The back of the shop has now been transformed into a Bigfoot museum and a place to let your imagination run wild.
This is a frame from the Patterson-Gimlin Bigfoot footage. It was filmed in 1967 in Northern California. still to date is the quintessential Bigfoot sighting. There was no technology in 1967 to create a suit that had breasts that bounced. Even the Academy Award-winning costume designer for the original Planet of the Apes said he could not have made a suit like this. They know she was 7 feet 6 inches tall, and by the impression of her feet in the sand and just the body mass, they estimated she weighed in the realm of 900 pounds.
But if the stories and evidence in the Bigfoot Museum aren't enough to convince you, you can sign up for one of their Squatching Adventures and head out into the woods to search for your own evidence, which is exactly what photojournalist Ray Harless and I did next.
Ray, we're going squatching.
Abby and Ray from Fox 21 News in Colorado Springs, and Daphne is with us, and Kevin Lynn. And we're going to see what activity we can get tonight.
That's a dog.
They hoop, they scream, they talk, they chatter like you hear people talking in the woods, but you can't make out the words. They knock on trees and clack rocks together. And this stick is my tree knocker. So when we get back farther, we'll knock some and see if anybody's out there wants to knock back. Woo! Nobody wants to play yet.
Why don't one of you ladies try a call? See what happens. Why don't you try, Abby?
We've hooped. We've whatever Kevin does. screech howls.
I think Ray meowed once.
Meowed. We've whistled. We've not had any replies so far.
While we didn't have any encounters on our Squatch Watch, others say they have, and not too far from where we were. In late July of this year, Kevin Lynn and a friend set up camp along the Colorado Trail in the Lost Creek Wilderness area.
It's starting to get dark, and so we decided we needed to try to find a flat area to set up camp and also get a fire going. So we did some calls and some tree knocks that night. And, you know, after about, I'd say 11 p.m. or so, we kind of settled in and decided to just go ahead and call it a night, probably 2, 3 o'clock in the morning again. We heard loud tree knocks and whooping or calls from some sort of creature or more than one, because we were hearing things from behind our tent as well as out in front of our tent.
This is the actual audio Kevin says he recorded that night.
And the only thing we could figure is they were maybe calling between each other and they knew we were there. We were actually got to a point where we just couldn't go to sleep again because it was repeated for a few hours.
So is Bigfoot out there?
Give me an hour and an open mind and I'll convince you.
Do you believe?
It only takes one sighting and you're an instant believer.
All right, so I'm, as promised, I'm on the phone with Jim. Jim had a sighting and a series of sightings in Colorado, you know, over the years. And I actually found him via it was a YouTube video. And I kind of tracked him down, and he was kind enough to come on the program. You there, Jim?
I'm here.
All right. So tell us, now you're out of Bailey, Colorado. Just for those folks who aren't familiar or kind of familiar with the state, where is that in relation to the state?
Bailey, Colorado, quite literally, is in the center, very center of Colorado, and Colorado is in the very center of the U.S., so basically Bailey is in the center of America.
Nice. So you literally are middle America.
We are middle America, quite literally,
nice.
Yeah.
Flyover country, I like it. So, yeah, I saw the news footage of the encounter itself. And thankfully, they let us know. Now give us the name again of your, the outpost there. You've got a museum and, you know, things related to Squatch and all that. What's the name of that?
We have a store called the Sasquatch Outpost.
Okay. And that, I think that was the part of the story I was able to track it down and got a hold of you. So I'm thankful that you responded to that. I definitely appreciate
sure.
it. But let's take a step back now. What's your, cause people like to know kind of what the whole story is behind the person that, you know, that I'm talking to. How long have you lived in Bailey? Kind of give us your background, kind of things leading up to this, you know, just take a few minutes and
sure.
kind of bring me into your world.
We've lived in Bailey for about 4 years. We lived in Colorado somewhere between 7 or 8 years. Actually moved here from France. My wife and I were working with a large Christian organization in France for 10 years and moved to Colorado for a change. We were ready for a change of life and change of occupation. And so the Sasquatch Outpost really started off as the Bailey Country Store. It was a 137-year-old building that had been boarded up for 3 years and had been the center of the town at one time. It was probably one of the first buildings built in Bailey back in the late 1800s. But it had fallen on bad times and needed desperately a lot of work. So we took it over in 2012, the summer, started rebuilding it. Took a long time and opened it in 2013, almost 3 years ago exactly to the day today, as the Bailey Country Store and Sasquatch Outpost. So let me tell you a little bit about why it was a Sasquatch Outpost at that point. I've been interested in Bigfoot my whole life, basically. When the movie The Legend of Boggy Creek came out, I think it was 1973 or 74,
mm-hmm.
scared the life out of me as a kid. But it started this interest in, could there be something out there? Could there be creatures like they showed in this movie? And so particularly the last 10 years or so, I've been very interested in studying Bigfoot online. Even when we were in France, I was very interested in following what was going on and looking up videos and looking up articles. And so we moved here. And as we were rebuilding the store, two things happened almost at the same time. I met a gal by the name of Kate, who lives here in Bailey. She was running a local motel when I met her. And I think it had been probably 4 or 5 months previously, she and her best friend had seen a Bigfoot when they were out walking end of May. It was early summer, and I had a very dramatic sighting, very, very low possibility of mistaken identity because of the circumstances of the sighting. So as soon as I heard the story, I immediately met with Kate and wanted to hear the whole story and hear what had happened, how it had happened. And at the same time, because of her sighting, the BFRO had heard about it and I guess had made a decision because of some other sightings in the area to come and do an episode of Finding Bigfoot here in Bailey. So we heard about Kate. I met Kate. Then the show came to town probably about a month later. And so they had the town hall meeting, and of course we had to go and make sure we got in on the action and got on the front row and wanted to
right, right.
See,
I think people forget it's still a show. You have to have the entertainment value.
You have to have people, and I think This is what got me going was they announced this show. There was no publicity about the show coming to town or about the town hall meeting. I think there was about 2 weeks' notice that this was going to take place, and there were over 100 people showed up, and it was standing room only at this place, and it was a it was at the motel actually that Kate was running. They had a big multi-purpose room, and don't know if the wind, you can hear the wind in the background. Let me get out get back inside here for a second. That big multi-purpose room, it was standing room only. And I thought, wow, this is amazing. No publicity and this many people show up. And of course they asked for witnesses and many people stood up and shared their stories. And so I just sat there fascinated that here in Colorado, central Colorado, in what most people would not have thought or would not think of as a Bigfoot stronghold, there was a packed house and probably 10 or 12 people stood up and told stories about seeing Bigfoot in this area. And so I thought, and I told my wife, you know what? I think there's something here, and I think we ought to see if there's enough interest that we could actually dedicate part of our store to Sasquatch and Sasquatch research. And so we did it. We started off as the Bailey Country Store and Sasquatch Outpost in June of 2013. And we tried to do the country store side of it for a couple of years, sold some groceries and things, gave that up last summer because the Sasquatch Outpost side just took off. I mean, it was, I could not believe the interest. And so last summer we dropped the Bailey Country Store and just renamed it as the Sasquatch Outpost, period.
Now, let me ask you this question, because that's a good point. First of all, what was the crowd like at finding Bigfoot? Now, I have to tell you, when I think of these events, right, I think of things in spectrums from left to right. So from crazy wackos all the way to sane, like normal people, you know, give us an idea of the type of crowd that showed up for that.
Well, it was interesting because I wondered the same thing. So I showed up. Now, I had already made a 9-foot tall wood cutout of Bigfoot that I was planning to put on the front of our store. And so I thought, I'm going to take this along and just see if maybe we can get this in the show. And so here I pull up with this great big wooden cutout of Bigfoot, and it's just a silhouette, but he's holding a sign that says, "I don't believe the evidence supports the existence of humans." And
right,
so,
right.
And I didn't know if we're going to use it. So I pull up into my pickup with this big wooden Bigfoot. A bunch of other people are there. The cast showed up. As the cast showed up, everyone was wanting to talk to him. And so as always, in I've subsequently noticed in meetings like this, there will be people who will monopolize. They'll just latch on to one of these personalities, TV personalities or well-known speakers, and monopolize their entire time that they're there. So
sure.
I could hardly even get a chance to meet the cast. And so we go into the building. As it turned out for the show, they ended up, I told the executive producer, I said, "Hey, I got this big cutout of Bigfoot. Do you guys want to use it?" He goes, "Yeah, we might use it in one of the B shots." And so turns out they pulled it, put it right next to the door. And as the cast walked in, they filmed this Bigfoot standing there and showing his sign and everything. So it was kind of fun. So I go into this meeting room. This was in late October, I think. It was getting chilly.
Sure.
I think they had a fire going. So somebody, there was a couple of people there who had brought, well, I walked in the room and somebody or several people had put pictures and posters and all this kind of stuff along the walls, in front of the, where the cast was going to be standing all mm-hmm. along the front of the building, and
yeah,
and pictures of UFOs and pictures of alien encounters. And I'm thinking,
right.
Lord, what kind
right.
of place, what kind of a meeting is this going to be? And
right.
I wondered if everyone there was going to be like this. It turned out that I think all of those pictures have been brought by one guy, and they made him pull it all together before they started filming, because they didn't want all that in front of the room. And he did get up and talk about, you know, Bigfoot and UFOs and aliens, and
you know,
you could see the people in the room kind of rolling their eyes.
Yeah, it's funny that you say that, because, well, not funny, because there's a lot of people going that direction. I mean, and let's get back to what you were saying, but there's a lot of people going in that direction, and I wonder if it's one of those things where we've not found specific evidence of Bigfoot in the sense that, okay, Sasquatch is real. So because we haven't found evidence, now we have to find a new reason why. Do you see it that
yeah,
way? Or?
Yeah. Oh, I do. And trust me, since that first meeting 3 years ago, my opinion on a lot of issues about Bigfoot, and I've gone full circle. I've come full circle on a lot of things that I can't explain, that even related to aliens and UFO sightings and Bigfoot sightings in the same areas and things. But at the time, 3 years ago, I was kind of rolling my eyes as well and saying, okay, let's get this guy out of here so we can really hear some serious people. But the rest of the people who stood up were all, in my opinion at the time, very credible. And these were business people. I don't think any of them have been out looking for Bigfoot. They simply saw a Bigfoot. And many of them were skeptics until this happened. And so I sat there and I was fascinated, and some very compelling stories. And so by the end of the meeting, I thought there's something to this. And
uh-huh.
these people have definitely seen something in this area. Who can say whether it was a Bigfoot or not, but they've seen something. And so that got us kind of launched, headed in the direction of becoming what's now the Sasquatch Outpost.
Now, you had your sighting, your experience prior to that, correct? So you had your experience.
Mine was subsequent to that, actually.
Okay.
But I've had a number of experiences, but the only visual sighting I've had was about 12 miles from downtown Bailey, where our store is a lake called Wellington Lake. It's a man-made lake, but it's beautiful. Very, very popular camping area, and just a very dramatic setting with a huge rock mountain next to it called the Castle. And so over the past 3 years, I would guess we've had, I would say conservatively, 10 reports of sightings or vocalizations or footprints from that lake area. And so last summer we were out camping, hoping that we could have an experience or hear something. And I was fishing early in the morning before 6:30, something like that. And every once in a while, as I was fishing, I would just glance up and look up at the rocks around the lake. And at one point I looked up and there was somebody or something standing, looking down. It was quite a ways away. It was definitely a figure up there, but it was enough of a distance that I couldn't distinguish color or anything. And I thought, I've been to that location, and it took me 2 hours to get up there on my hands and knees. It was so steep. That cannot be a person. I mean, there's no way that can be a person up there at this time of the morning.
Now, do you say that because they would have had to crawl up in the dark?
Yeah, I mean, and there's not, it's possible they could have gone up there the night before to camp, but it's just not, people that are hiking, that's not a normal hiking area. There's a trail that goes up to the top of this thing called the Castle. That's not that was not on the trail. This is a whole different section. There was no trail. You just have to bushwhack it and climb up the side of this steep incline. So there was no easy way to get up there. So somebody or something was standing up there at 7 in the morning looking down. I could tell it was quite large. That's all I could tell. And so at that point, I get a tug on my fishing line, of course, and I turned and tried to see if the fish was on. And when I looked back maybe 5-6 seconds later, it was gone. It had stepped back into the trees and was out of sight. And
now
so
let me ask you this question. What made you look up in the first place?
Because I was looking. I was specifically looking for any evidence of Bigfoot, because there's been so many sightings at this lake. And I'm always because people had spoken in the past about seeing figures or something up on these rocks moving or looking down, and so I was surprised when I actually saw something. You know, you kind of hope, you know, look around hoping, not really expecting to see anything. So when I saw something, I kicked myself that I hadn't brought any binoculars with me fishing. I mean, who takes binoculars fishing, right? So I kicked myself. I didn't have any.
Actually, last week, did you take some? I was in Colorado. We talked about this. I was in Arapaho National Forest, and we were at Monarch Lake. And because I had a broken my ankle, I couldn't get around very well, but, you know, I could shore fish. I guarantee you I had nice binoculars, and I was scoping the shorelines and up the mountains. So, sorry, I'm that guy. Go ahead.
You're that guy. Well, that guy. You know, I'd take them now, I can tell you that.
Yeah.
So it disappeared, and that's the last I saw of it. I cannot say 100% certainty it was a Sasquatch, but because of where it was and the time of day it was and the size of it, I cannot imagine it was a person. It's just extremely unlikely that it was a person up there.
Sure.
So the other encounters that we've had have all been close encounters, but not visual. There were more sounds at night, things thrown at us in the woods, tree knocks, those type of experiences, but very close. But that's the only sighting I've actually had, if it was, mm-hmm. in fact, a Sasquatch.
So now, how do you vet out people? So here's the thing, right? So now you're probably known in the area as the guy to come to with your Sasquatch story.
We are.
When somebody comes to you, how do you vet them out to know if they're full of it or not? Or do you, like, how do you approach that?
Well, first of all, people are far more willing now that our store's been there for 3 years, willing to tell their story than they were 3 years ago. We, mm-hmm. in our museum, we have a 4-foot by 5-foot map of Colorado with pins that people can put their sightings on the map. And so I don't let anyone put a pin on the map unless we've talked to them and heard their story and feel convinced. And so I don't know how many people have come in and told their stories. Easily 200 people in the last 3 years, maybe more. So there are a few people that, and of all those people, all 200 of those or more probably, I would guess I've only felt maybe 8 to 10 of them were not legitimate. Either they seem to be out to just impress me with the story, and they had many stories. Usually this type of person will have many stories, all of them unbelievable. So,
sure.
Oh, I've seen Sasquatch, you know, 15 times. And we have one guy came in and he would tell me, yeah, if I want to see Sasquatch, I go out and make love to my girlfriend in the woods, and they always come and watch. And I'm like, really, Peeping Tom, Bigfoot, you know? So that kind of a person, you know, and his stories were just outrageous. I mean, the sightings he said he'd had. And having done this for a long time now, you realize even the most veteran Bigfoot researchers have had maybe a handful of sightings. I mean, this is, you just don't find people who are very serious about it and who have 10, 15, 20 sightings. So, or they just seem to be kind of mentally unstable.
Sure.
And that's kind of the image that a lot of people have of Bigfoot researchers is, yeah, they're just a bunch of kooks. By far, the majority of the people who come in are very serious working people, many of them scientists, many of them, all walks of life, all professions. And very often they're reluctant to talk about it. And it's only after we've talked for a while and they have vetted me, actually, that they will start opening up and saying, well, I actually have a story. And they'll wait till there's no one else in the store and then I hear their story.
So, now, isn't it crazy? Isn't it crazy? It's almost like this dance that you do. I can always tell when somebody wants, this happened at work the other day. Somebody had a friend of a friend or had a friend who had seen something in Maine. And they knew that I had a podcast. And we got to talking about
right.
the podcast. And then you kind of dance around the subject. And they literally look around and they're like, you know what? I got a story, dude. I got to tell this to you. And then
they look around to see if anyone's listening first.
Right, right. Well, here's the thing. I feel like that with Bigfoot, there are only a few wonders left in the world, right? And some outside the world, meaning so one day we're going to find life out in the galaxy, okay?
Correct.
But internally here, other than what we don't know about the deep blue sea, Bigfoot's about the only thing that we don't know about that walks on God's green earth. So there's kind of a fascination, right? There's kind of a mythical fascination that, you know what, I'm a rational person. People are seeing these things. There's footprints. They can't all be wrong. So there's kind of an excitement. Do you feel like that kind of drives people as well?
Oh, yeah. And I think there's no question that I call it the Bigfoot phenomenon. I'm speaking at a museum in another town here in Colorado in a couple of weeks. And the title of the talk is the Bigfoot phenomenon, and it's America's fascination with Bigfoot. And anytime on TV, you could turn on the TV and go through the guide page, and you're going to find something about Bigfoot during that day or within a day before or day after.
Absolutely.
And it's documentaries, it's movies, it's anything you can imagine. So there's no question that of all the mysteries or cryptozoological creatures, and, you know, you can throw in there chupacabra or,
sure.
you know, lizard reptilian people, all of them fade in comparison to the amount of interest in Bigfoot alone and the amount of sightings and data behind Bigfoot. It just dominates any other supposed mythological creature.
You know,
America is fascinated with it.
Yeah, it's funny that you say that. And thanks for following up on that. Gave me time to think about this. Art Bell had once said, whenever he had any kind of Sasquatch or Bigfoot researchers on or topic, his phone lines went crazy. His email
yeah.
went crazy. So that just points directly to that fascination. Now, we talked about that fascination. We talked about the kind of crowd that was at the Finding Bigfoot filming and all of that. I get what you're saying, and we often kind of surmise that you're going to get a mixed crowd. But of the people that you find credible and of all the sightings that you have, these are obviously Class A sightings. People see these things, or maybe they're near experiences, as I call them. What type of creature are they seeing? Are they colored red? Are they dark black?
Great question. Great question. And we have enough data now that we can start to draw some conclusions. But they are seeing large creatures. Usually, you know, 6 feet would be small. 8, 9, 10 feet even, people have reported. Dark brown, reddish hair. Red hair seems to come up very often. And reddish brown hair, completely covered in hair, although their faces are typically not so covered in hair, the hands not so much. And even gray hair, I think people have we've heard numbers of reports about Bigfoot that seems to be gray, or, you know, almost like an old age gray kind of coloring.
Yeah, we have those up in Maine. Yeah.
So, and so, which stands to reason, you know, gorillas go gray when they get old.
Sure.
So
yeah.
That stands to reason, but, very large, very muscular, very dominant, powerful. And if they hear anything, if the creature makes any noise or any howl or roar, the volume, the one thing that comes across more often than anything else is the volume. It's just, it's
right.
Deafening. It just pounds on your chest, which is why they know it's not a person and it's not any other creature that they've ever heard. And so a fairly recent sighting we had here was April 4th. You talk about how do you vet people.
Mm-hmm.
A gentleman came in my store. It was an afternoon. It was like a Thursday afternoon, maybe 2 o'clock. And he comes in the store and he looked very agitated. He was about, I'm about 5'9". This guy was about 5'10", but much bigger built than me. And
mm-hmm.
he had both his arms were full sleeve tattoos. And so he comes in and he's just kind of, pacing a little bit inside the store. So I said, can I help you with something? He hesitated a long time. He goes, well, I don't know if I really want to ask this question. And he looked around, there were some other people in the store. And he said, do you have someone in the woods in a suit? He didn't say Bigfoot suit. He just said in a suit. I said, no, I don't have anyone in the woods. I said, why, did you see something? He said, yeah. I said, when? He said, just now, like an hour ago. And so, and then he's marching around. Then he asked me again, are you sure you don't have someone in the woods in a Bigfoot suit? And I said, no, I do not. And then he asked me again, and in about 5 minutes, he asked me three times. The last time he said, look me in the eyes and tell me you don't have someone in the woods in a Bigfoot suit. And I said, dude, I would be an idiot to do that because this is rural Colorado. They'll be shot if someone
right.
has a gun and sees them. So that's no, I do not have someone in the woods. So what had happened was he had taken his dog out at noon, about noon or 12:30 in the afternoon, very widely used trail called the Ben Tyler Trail, about 5 miles outside of Bailey.
Yeah.
And he starts climbing. He had his pit bull with him. He starts climbing up these switchbacks, and he wasn't very high up above the highway. You could still see and hear the cars down below. He said he turned the corner on the next switchback. He's looking down. His dog is ahead of him, and she all of a sudden hits reverse with her tail between her legs, backs up between his legs, doesn't even turn around. She just backs up and starts running down the mountain. And so he reaches down and grabs her. And he's thinking, what in the world did she see? Was there a snake or something? And he turned, and he said 40 feet up the trail, standing in the middle of the trail, was this hairy creature sort of standing sideways to him, looking at him, looking him in the eyes. And I actually drew, I'm an artist, I drew a picture of this creature later in the day as he told me the story again. I kind of sketched it, a little bit of a forensic sketch, I guess, and
mm-hmm.
had him correct me where I was wrong. But he said it was covered in hair. It was brownish red hair, 6.5, maybe a little bit taller. The funny thing about this one, he said it had a pot belly and it had breasts. Now, those are two things you would not normally throw into a story if you're making it up. And,
right.
and I said, what did it look like? And he stood there and he kind of bent his knees and stuck his stomach out and slouched a little bit. And he said it looked like an old man with old man boobs, but it was huge. And so that was the only way he could describe it. It wasn't slouching. That was just the best way he could describe it. And
sure.
he said It was looking him straight in the eyes, and the thing he noticed the most were the eyes. And apparently this guy used to raise wolves for a living, and he said this creature had wolf eyes. They were intense, you know, dark, glaring eyes. And he said his first thought was, what am I seeing? And then as he stood there, and this all was in the span of about 3 seconds, it breathed in a deep breath, and it blinked its eyes in slow motion, never taking its eyes off of him. And at that point, he turned and ran for his life down the mountain. But the way he described the hair, the color of the hair, the height, the build, minus the breasts and stomach, but usually he also said it had long hair hanging off the arms. And he noticed that hair moving in the wind. It's funny what you notice in a brief moment in a traumatic experience, and he noticed the long hair on the arms, the inhale, and the blink of the eyes for the three things he talked about. And so he took off. He thought he was dead. He thought the thing was going to kill him. And he ran straight down the mountain and took off. And he said, now here's where I realized he was credible. Now this guy told me later, he used to be a mixed martial arts fighter. He said, I used to get in the ring with huge guys. He said, I was never afraid. I was terrified when I saw this thing. He said, scared out of my mind. So he came back into Bailey, and he remembered that he had to go get a license plate. It's a funny thing to do. I don't know why he did this, but he went to the local police station to get his license tags, and he said to the two ladies behind the counter that he had seen something in the woods, and he asked them about me, and he said, is this guy down the street here legit or not? And they said, you know, I don't know. You're going to have to go talk to him. Well, about 2 weeks later, one of those women came in the store unsolicited.
Yeah.
And she told the story. She said, yeah, this guy came in a few weeks back and said he had been out in the woods and seen. So when she corroborated the story exactly, I thought, okay, this guy's serious. He did see what he said he saw. And but the stories are always seem to have some element of hair. The color of the hair is generally the same. It seems the farther away they are, sometimes the darker they appear to the person. And
well, that can make sense, yeah, depending on the lighting and that sort
of
thing.
Yeah, the light, dark, you know, brown looks darker the farther away you are. So size is always an issue, just massive, massive height and muscles, and then this incredible voice, if they do make a noise at all.
Yeah, I talked to David Ellis was saying that it's a sound that he likens to like a roar of a lion, an extended roar, but also the trumpeting of an elephant. Like it's a sound that you that you can't quite, that's about as good as you can get as far as the explanation goes. But I'm looking at right now a topo map of Ben Tyler Trail and that Ben Tyler Gulch. Now, it looks to be, and for the folks that are listening out there, you can just go to Trip Report. I think it's tripreport.com. Pull it up. And, Jim, by the way, thank you for this, because now I can take a look at where roughly the sighting was. I don't know exactly on the trail.
And this is the end. There's two ends to the trail. This is the end right on Highway 285 that
right.
I'm talking about.
Okay, gotcha. Okay. Yep, I see that right here. So it shows right in the end of 285, trailhead, and it gives the coordinates. Oh, shoot. But yeah,
it's quite steep there.
Yeah,
right?
It does get steep, especially on either side, left or right, depending on if you're going which direction. So this looks to me like a natural travel corridor. You know, I don't know if you hunt at all, but obviously animals will take that path of least resistance, just like we will. That's why we can kind of ambush them. But what is on either side or either end of this? I've just got this one area. I don't have one to pull out further. Is there anything on either end that these things might be traveling back and forth to or from?
Well, the trail simply crosses over the mountain range. It goes way above tree line and then back down into what is known as the Lost Creek Wilderness, a vast wilderness area just the other side of the mountain range from Bailey. And so not really. I mean, we've had a lot of sightings along that mountain range that runs along 285. Mm-hmm. And Wellington Lake is an extension of that mountain range as well, where we've had a number of sightings. So I can't think of anything. It's a very, there's nobody living there. It's all uninhabited.
Mm-hmm.
Except if you get down by the highway, which is where Bailey is, but you only have to go up maybe a half mile or quarter mile above town, and it's nothing. And you can go for miles and miles and miles, and there's nothing back there. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's strange that this creature confronted him where it did, because it's right above the highway. It's a very, the people that use the trail, the most often used part of that trail is that part of the trail, because it's easy to get to and park, and people will walk up. My wife and I did it the other day. You walk up an hour or 2 hours and come back down. And so we were hiking on a Sunday morning. I think we came across 15 or 20 hikers. It's very frequented. But when he saw it, it was the middle of the week. There were not as many people on the trail.
Yeah, you've got to I mean, and you know this too, that they realize, you know, times of the day, times of the year, you know, things are cyclical to them. I mean, they live in the woods, so they kind of know. It's just like deer kind of know about the time hunting season's coming around in the fall.
They do.
They sense it every year, and they just go crazy, and all their patterns are, you know, thrown to the wind. But the other question I have for you is, we talked about the type of these Sasquatch creatures that we're seeing as far as coloring and size and everything. Two questions. First, are there seasonalities to these sightings? That's the first question. And the second question is, are these consistent colors per season, or do they change as the season goes? So I guess what I'm saying is, does their appearance change from fall to winter to summer? Are you noticing any of that, or is that – I'm a detail guy. I like to dive down into that.
Sure, and we're looking at that as well, because we have enough sightings now that we can start to plot time of year, location. But I would say there's more sightings in the summer. But to me, that's simple logic, because there's more people in the woods in the summer.
Sure.
We have sightings in the winter. We find far more tracks in the winter than we do in the summer because of snow. And so the ground out here in this part of the Rockies is extremely hard. It's decomposed
right.
granite. It's really hard to make an impression, but snow is perfect. And so
mm-hmm.
If you came into our museum, probably 3/4 of the photos I have of tracks are in the snow. And so we have not noticed that I don't believe there's fewer sightings in the winter than the summer. It's that there's fewer people to see them in the winter than in the summer.
Sure.
So,
sure.
And coloration, no, we've never heard of any change in coloration according to the season. When they're seen in the winter, they're the same dark brown, red color as they are in the summer. It's interesting though that I believe they have an extremely high level of intelligence, and I think there's a lot of evidence to prove that. And one of those pieces of evidence is when they can avoid leaving a trail. I believe they do. If they can avoid walking through snow, they will avoid it, because they know that their tracks are easily seen. And so it's only when snow covers the entire ground and they have no choice that we'll find tracks. But I just think they are extremely, extremely intelligent, far more than most people give them credit. And so they're aware of their
sure.
tracks.
Okay, I would not be doing my job. I would not be doing my job if I did not challenge you a little bit on that.
Sure.
And you think that, and listen, if the answer that you tell me is, hey, it's just a hunch based on behavior we do know, why would you go out and make that statement, you know, saying that they definitely avoid putting tracks down? Are there other animals in the known animal kingdom that do that? Or is it something
no.
based on a hunt? Bring us in
I've
here.
Never,
that's why.
I've never heard of another animal that has the self-awareness, that's what it comes down to.
Sure.
It has the self-awareness to avoid leaving tracks. I've heard many, many stories of tracks that are found in the snow where the track line will follow any concealment possible. So they don't simply walk across the snow. If there's an area where they can walk on rocks, they walk on the rocks. If there's an area where there's a patches of dry ground, they're going to walk on the dry ground, and then you'll find maybe another track in the snow. It seems to be very intentional, not haphazard, because the tracks will veer according to the terrain and what looks, for all intents and purposes, to be an effort to avoid showing their tracks. And I would say, not just the fact that their tracks follow concealing terrain, but just the other things that we know about them or believe we know about them, the fact that they are so stealthy and so infrequently seen, the fact that they do build things out of trees and build structures and nests and with their hands. And so this is far beyond certainly any other mammal in the U.S., any bear or
sure.
Bears would be the closest thing that people would tend to compare a Bigfoot with. I laugh because people, when they hear about someone who's seen a Sasquatch, or believes they did, they'll say, well, you must have seen a bear. If you've ever seen bears walk on two legs,
right,
you know this is a stupid comparison. So they're extremely clumsy, and they never walk more than four or five steps before they get back down on all fours. So
right.
That's why I believe they are that intelligent. Now, I have one sighting that I unfortunately have not been able to verify, and I've tried. And this is someone who works in one of our local restaurants as a waitress, and I heard secondhand someone who she told this story to that they saw a Bigfoot cross their driveway in the winter, and later they came back and the tracks were swept with leaves or branches. And so not only were the Bigfoot tracks swept, but the car tracks were swept in the same area, because the car had gone through there as well. So that whole section was swept clean of tracks. Well, if that is true, and again, I wish I could say I confirmed it with the person herself, but if that is true, that level of intelligence rivals human intelligence.
Yeah, that's interesting. Even to the level of even if it's a 2 or 3 year old developmental level than a human being, that's still pretty advanced.
Very, very.
Now, let me ask you this then. Of all the sightings, people are coming to you, what are typically the sighting characteristics? A certain time of day, they were doing a certain activity, bring us into that, because I have a theory that we see Sasquatch only when we surprise them, or they just can kind of observe us from a far distance and they're surprised that we see them. And so it's a pride factor.
I would disagree with that, because I believe that we only see them when they choose to be seen. So when we're out in the woods, I believe it's almost impossible to surprise a Sasquatch in their natural habitat, because they are there all the time. They know their area. They know the smells, the sounds. They know the weather. And so when we're walking in the woods, we're typically very loud, very destructive. We're breaking stuff. We're talking. We have dogs with us that are making noise. So I am absolutely convinced that if we see a Sasquatch, it's because they chose to be seen at that moment. Another perfect case in point is the number of sightings crossing a highway when the highway is deserted and they choose the one moment when the car comes down the highway with their headlights and they cross right in front of the car. And they could have crossed 3 seconds before that, 10 seconds later, no one would have ever seen them. And this, I've heard this over and over and over, that they cross right when the car is there. And so it's, they seem to want to be seen. I don't know why. I couldn't explain that. But even in the woods, I believe what people are seeing, more than likely, this is a theory, is they're seeing a sentinel, because I think we have enough evidence to show that Sasquatch live in family groups, adults and youngsters, juveniles, that when you see one, it's almost always an adult. I've only heard of a handful of juvenile sightings, and so it's always an adult, virtually always a male, so there's no sign of breasts or anything, and only one. And so our theory, myself and a number of other researchers, is that that one you see is the one who intended to be seen, because they are somehow protecting others in the area. And it's a very common tactic in nature. I mean, a lot of very base intelligence creatures do the same thing. Birds do that. You know, sure. They'll mislead you. They'll lead you away from their young. And so, the sightings have been time of day. No, I mean morning, noon, evening. There seems to be sightings in 1 2-week period last summer in another area not far from Bailey called Jefferson Lake. There were three sightings, always an extremely large, apparently adult male Sasquatch within 1 mile of each other, three sightings in July. And all three were sightings by no less than three people and up to six people at one time. And so you have that many people, daylight, seeing the same thing. Mistaken identity is virtually impossible. And so, sure. So we're seeing it all times of day. And then at night, obviously not many people are going out at night. I mean, we go out at night, but you have to be a little crazy to do it. And so the people who are out at night are either hikers who are camping, and they're hiking the Colorado Trail or whatever, and they set up their camp at night and they have some kind of an experience, or people like us who intentionally go out at night hoping to have an encounter. And those are very seldom is there a sighting. It's almost always a vocalization or a sound of some kind, because it's night. You just can't see them.
Sure. Now, do you guys record any of these sounds at all?
We do. We do.
Okay. Do you bounce them off of the Dr. Bindernagel and David Ellis were both talking about the Macaulay Sound Library at Cornell University? I guess you can go online. And do you ever bounce some of these things off known sounds, or how do you kind of vet these out?
Well, we have you mentioned David Ellis. We actually had some recordings that a friend of mine locally here, John Andrews, who lived in Washington for many, many years and worked with the Olympic Project, we had some very strange sounds that a friend of mine had recorded. And so he sent them to Dave and had him run it through his software, I guess. And it came back. He had enhanced it and slowed it down and looped it. And so what we're trying to do is when we have something that sounds intriguing enough, we don't know what it is, but we're very curious to know, we'll compare it to other things that we've recorded. And if possible, and if we can find someone like Ellis who is willing to work with the file to clean it up a little bit, take out some of the background static, et cetera, so you get a cleaner sound. And in this case, he gave his opinion that One of the sounds most people would have said was a dog. He said he didn't believe it was a dog. It didn't follow a typical signature of a dog bark. It was a whoop of some kind. And then this really strange, almost, I don't know how to describe it, almost a demonic chuckle that was recorded that the guys who recorded it did not hear. They were sitting at the fire talking. Their recorder was 150 feet away, and the recorder picked this up. And so, and he said he had heard a similar, heard similar sounds that followed a similar pattern in Grays Harbor, Washington. And so he said, I'm not unfamiliar with this sound. This is a sound that I've heard before. And so that lent to me some credibility that maybe this was not just an audible anomaly. This was actually a vocalization of some kind.
Nice. So now it's good to hear that you guys are hooking up with the Olympic Project, because the more research I do, I mean, they're a solid group. And as David said, they're the what's next guys. You know, they're actually laying out long-term plans. As I'm sure you guys are too. But you said something that was interesting to me that I've not heard other researchers say. So you got interested in Bigfoot prior to having this sighting of this creature up on, you know, up the rocks quite a ways away, standing there, presumably observing you, right? When you look back, it was gone, and it turned and walked to wherever it had come from. And you started this research, and now you're on this journey, and you have come up with some pretty interesting research kind of ideas on what you think things might be. And the one that I wanted to ask you about is what you think the wood knots are and why you think they are what they are.
Well, obviously, the wood knots are a very common phenomenon that people hear when they're out daytime and nighttime. We've heard it both day and night. Sometimes in response, what seems to be an apparent response to our knocking, sometimes it's just, we just hear the knock.
Right.
And so, and I know what it sounds like when I knock on wood, and it has a very definite characteristic, you know, ring to it. We tend to use like hickory wood that rings really loud and far. But I began to wonder about this because I've only heard of one, doesn't mean there aren't more examples, of one person, and I'm not even sure where I could find this evidence, that this was a friend that told me that they had read about one person that had actually seen a Sasquatch hit a tree with something, so make a wood knock. Every other time, all the wood knocks that I've ever heard about, that I've heard or other people have heard, are just the knock. All you hear is the knock, and it can be extremely loud. I mean, it's obviously a very powerful creature doing this. So I began to wonder, does Sasquatch walk around with sticks in his hands all the time? It almost seems, times that we've had responses, it was so soon. I mean, 3 seconds, maybe 2 seconds after we would knock, boom, and then boom. And it's almost like if there were a hiker doing it, they would not have even had time to find something to pick up off the ground and hit.
Right.
And so it's so quick right afterwards. Not always. Sometimes it's a long delay, but sometimes it's been so fast and almost immediate that I think it just seems so unlikely that Sasquatch just walks around carrying sticks and branches and clubs. And
right.
So I had this idea that I've since talked with a number of other researchers about, that is it possible that Sasquatch, because we know that they are incredible mimics. We know they mimic other birds and coyotes and wolves. And so, is it possible that they are making this sound vocally?
Right.
And so I've talked to some other guys, and I was surprised to find that this was not an original thought to me. Other researchers have told me, yeah, you know, I've wondered the same thing. And is it possible that Sasquatch has anatomically some structure in their throat? The only thing I could compare it to would be the howler monkey or something like that. They have a specific sound pouch, you know, that inflates in their throat, and they can create this enormous volume for the creature of their size. What if Sasquatch has some ability to create a sound that sounds like a knock of wood, but it's just vocally created? Because it's, and again, the reason that I originally had that idea was it seems so unlikely to me that they would just walk around carrying stuff to hit with in case they might hear something, you know.
Well, there, let me ask you this question. Let's take it even a little bit further. So what you're hearing is, and I'm going way out on a limb, but we're just kind of ripping here a little bit. If these things are as big as people are seeing them to be, 8, 9, 10 feet tall, it would make sense that anatomically they're, you know, everything is proportioned, right? I mean, roughly. So
correct, yeah.
Vocal cords, chest, it's all there. In the English, well, it's not the English language, but in some tribes and languages around the world, they have that clicking sound when they talk.
Right, clicking.
Would it be way out there to think that some kind of tongue reflex or something, that's a knocking sound, that they make it much louder than we do simply by that, you know what I mean? Do you
sure.
see what I'm getting at? And I don't mean to be clicking
sure.
my tongue here, but you can make it sound like a sharp pop stick hitting the wood.
Yeah. I don't doubt that at all. How they could do it, I don't really know. But I know, I believe that's at least possible. It's in the realm of possibility that Sasquatch creates this sound vocally. And so, and again, it's because there's a great deal of evidence out there that they mimic other natural sounds. And sometimes they do it to provoke other animals, it seems. Sometimes they do it to communicate between different members of the family group. But yeah, I think they could be making a clack with their tongue but it's just, I still think that the most compelling reason for believing that is that they just, anytime they've been sighted, no one's ever talked about them carrying a club. You know, it's just never, except for one story that I've never been able to validate. So they're seen walking. They're just striding. Their hands are free, unless they're carrying a deer. And I've
right.
had numerous reports of them carrying dead animals. But as far as carrying a tool to smack something with, never. I've never heard of a story of them carrying something like that.
That's interesting. So we're coming up on an hour, and we're kind of coming up against the clock here. But I wanted to ask you a couple of quick questions.
Sure.
And I want to give you time to kind of plug what you're doing as well, you know, give out your website and that sort of thing, too. Because if people, especially if there's people listening in Colorado, I definitely want them to be able to kind of reach out to you. But research-wise, you see a lot of people doing tree knocks and howls and moans and this and that. Are you doing anything that's a little bit different that you might be able to share with other researchers? Some groups don't like to share. You know, what is it you think people are doing that look, I would never do that because X, Y, Z. What can you share with us? What are your thoughts on that, on research?
Well, we have tried and still try all the typical things that other people are doing, knocking and whooping and, you know, call blasting from an electronic source. In hopes that we get a response. Sometimes we do, many times we don't. Something that we've tried recently, and again, I hesitate to say this because I don't want it to come across as though we're getting into the kooky realm, but there's an increasing number of people that I've met who talk about the mind speak aspect of Bigfoot, where they believe that they communicate with Bigfoot telepathically somehow. And so And I initially poo-pooed all this, but I've heard it over and over and over. And again, you can't validate it because it's because of the nature of what it is. And so some of the folks that are on our local research team have been challenging me to give this a little bit more open-mindedness. And when you go out, try to go out with a frame of mind and heart that is open, receptive, a learner's posture to actually try to communicate in your mind. And I'd have to say I don't think I've ever done this successfully, but there's enough about the whole realm of Bigfoot research, Sasquatch research, that I find fascinating. I don't have any explanation for it, that I thought, why not? You know, it's worth a try. Sure. Is it possible that they can communicate this way with us? Sure. So that's something that we're trying, where we'll go out and we'll just sit in the woods in the dark and just meditate and try to see if we can find some kind of a connection, if they're out there and if they're willing, with the Sasquatch.
Well, it's funny that you say that. Again, as a hunter, and you hunt, you know this. It's I believe that there is an energy you give off when you go into the woods to kill something. Like there's no doubt. There's an energy. I think animals can sense it. So what you're telling me is not out of the realm of possibility. I am a nuts and bolts guy. I'm what I can see, feel, you touch, all that stuff. I think though, I can't close my mind to anything because I feel like, well, they've not been found definitely. Like, we can't prove it scientifically. We don't have one, I hate to say captivity, but in captivity, or we don't have a dead body, or we have empirical evidence that shows that they exist. So what I used to say is, hey, you guys are nut jobs. And I go, listen, maybe you're right. I'm open to anything now. Because we've not, you know,
yeah,
and in the span of things, look, in the time of, since, you know, time began till this point, literally we've been looking for Sasquatch for what would be not even a piece of pebble on a beach of 10 million pebbles. Like, it's been such a small amount of time, you know, at some point we're going to get to the answer of it. But, you know, in my finite thinking, in my human little pea mind, I'm just like, well, you know what, I'm open to anything at this point. You know, when I saw Les Stroud do the whole, you know, meditate
right.
thing on his thing, I thought, okay, Les, you just jumped the shark, I'm out. But then the more I thought about it, I'm like, who am I to say? Because I don't have the answers. I don't have one of these things.
Sure.
I mean, you know, so, yeah. So why don't you tell us, you know, where folks can find you, get in touch with you.
Sure.
And the whole nine.
Well, our physical store is located right on Highway 285, which as you leave Denver, there's really two main highways that leave Denver: Interstate 70, which most people take to go skiing, and Highway 285, and it goes right through Bailey, right through downtown, the little tiny downtown of Bailey. And so we are literally right off of that highway, and at 149 Main Street in Bailey. And we have a physical store. We sell a lot of merchandise related to Bigfoot, and we have a what we call the Sasquatch Encounter Discovery Museum, which kind of our claim to fame in there is a 7.5-foot 3D hairy Bigfoot that I built
nice.
Over a number of months, and it is, and I just a little moment of shameless self-promotion.
Sure, it is ahead.
So realistic that when I was working on this museum and what we gave him the name Boomer, when Boomer was in there looking at me, because he has taxidermy eyes, it would freak me out so much that I would have to stop working in the back at night by myself. It just, it was,
nice.
And I'm trying to talk myself out of it, thinking I built this, how can I be so freaked out by it? But he is so realistic. It's uncanny. So you have to see him to believe him. But And then online is SasquatchOutpost.com, and we have a number of resources on there. We're trying to add to it all the time, but we organize outings and events. We have speakers come in locally. We would love for Bailey, Colorado to become a Bigfoot hub, much like Hanobia has become in Oklahoma, much like Salt Fork in Ohio, Washington. There's nothing in this part of the central U.S. There's really nothing. There's no gathering going on. And we would love for Bailey and this part of Colorado to become a center like that.
So when's the best time for me to come out and visit you for a couple of days? When would that be? You got to have an event or you got to talk? Because I'm going to go out in the field with you. That's the other thing about having a show. I just invite myself places.
Absolutely. You're more than welcome. And we'd even put you up at our place. But really, any time, I mean, summer is the easiest time. And we're in the process of trying to work it out with Bob Gimlin to come speak. We had Ron Moorhead in April. We've had Dave Pilates a couple of times. He lives locally here. And so we would love to have Bob. That would be a great occasion to come, but I'm not sure when that will be. So until we know I have a confirmation of that date, you're welcome anytime. We always have stuff going on throughout the summer.
Yeah, I'd love to do a little bit of research and maybe the premise of the show, Bigfoot Ground Zero, was always to, and I've been able to do it a couple of times, get out into the field and interview people where things have happened. And if I've not been able to do that, at least get to the area and interview people, talk to researchers and that sort of thing. But, you know, this phenomenon is so large, it's not possible. I don't have the budget to get on a plane and go everywhere I need to go. But, you know, the idea of being maybe at some point building out a network of folks and maybe have people like you on the show who, you know, can give updates as to what's going on and just slowly build a network. And that's always what I've wanted to do, but it's just really hard to get groups to work together for whatever reason. I think it's a human ego or I don't know. I have no idea, but anyway, hey, listen, Jim, thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate
it. You're welcome. You're very welcome.
I know the listeners are definitely stoked to have you on the show, and I know there will be questions, and whatever I get that comes in, if you don't mind, I'll forward it to you, and maybe you can get on.
That'd be fine. I'd be happy to try and answer if we can.
That's right. Now I'm going to go on your website right after we're done here and see if there's anything I can't spend my hard money on. Yes. I love it.
Great.
Listen, I'm a sucker for Bigfoot stuff. Trust me. I was in the, in Maine. Lauren Coleman has the, Cryptozoology Museum. I was up there with my family and I dragged them through there for well over an hour and I could just see my wife like, okay, let's go. I'm like, no, we got one more thing to look at. You know? Anyway. All right, sir. I will be talking to you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for the invite. And like Bobo says, keep it squatchy, I guess, right?
You bet. Look forward to talking again sometime.
You've been listening to Bigfoot Ground Zero. If you like what you've heard and would like to hear more shows just like this, visit BigfootWorldwideRadioNetwork.com. Bigfoot Ground Zero is powered by the Bigfoot Worldwide Radio Network.
All the times have come here, but now they're gone. Seasons don't fear the reaper, nor do the wind, the sun, or the rain. We can be like they are. Come on, baby, don't fear the reaper. Baby, take my hand. Don't fear the reaper. We'll be able to fly. Don't fear the reaper. Baby, I'm your man.
Take in his hand. She had to come right there. Come on, baby.